Well, you know, there are two things that are vital on this planet that I believe. One is taking care of the people you care about. The other is taking care of your own health. Because if you lose that, then you can't take care of the people you care about. In a moment, we'll be talking with Dr. Harvey Biggleson about doctors are more harmful than germs. But he's also written The Holographic Blood, The Cure for Cancer. This is going to be a fantastic night. So sit back, enjoy, and listen to Coast AM. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Harvey Biggleson, MD, served his country in Vietnam as a commanding officer in charge of mass casualties and as a trauma surgeon. He had a very successful ophthalmology practice in Princeton, New Jersey, before moving to Arizona and following a more non-traditional medical philosophy. He has co-authored the Arizona Homeopathic Medical Practice Act. The law gave homeopathy equal legal status with all kinds of osteopathic medicine and types of medicine as well. Here's Dr. Biggleson on Coast to Coast. Hey, Harvey, how are you?
I'm very good. I'm glad to be here, George.
Looking forward to this. And by the way, thank you for serving, by the way.
Oh, you're very welcome. That was, very frankly, as a surgeon, that was a very rewarding time, that how many people I could help. And that part of surgery is very important.
Let me ask you just a few questions about that. I was in the Navy for 9 years, but I never served, so I didn't have to go through that. What was it like? Was it like the movie MASH? I mean, as a surgeon, were you constantly getting barraged with the casualties and soldiers being brought in?
Well, first of all, the war was mainly fought at night. So nighttime, yes. I did over 200 surgeries in Vietnam. I was there 6 months after the Tet broke out, so I was there at the height of the war. We were in a major hospital. It was a MASH unit, but it was a major hospital. It was horrendous, as honest as I can tell you. They'd bring them in with helicopter, but frankly, 98% that we got into the hospitals, we saved.
That's fantastic.
That was very, very, very rewarding. And those are good statistics from Vietnam.
Without your help, they probably all would have been gone.
Yeah. I mean, really, honestly, the medical evacuation, how they did it, was absolutely incredible. And so many people, more people would have died without what we did.
Well, again, thanks. And whenever you would watch episodes of MASH after you came back, I mean, did you say, you know, that was right on?
It was to a certain degree, but frankly, it took me 9 years to watch things like Deer Hunter and MASH. The trauma and the emotional trauma and the lies, that's what turned me around, too, was the lies of Vietnam. And I started to not trust the establishment.
Ah, okay. Well, and Hollywood didn't capture it properly.
No, it was not the fun thing that you think about. And what would go on TV, what Johnson would talk about on TV and what was happening on the ground, were two entirely different things.
You know, you were talking earlier about Charlie Sheen. Maybe Platoon, maybe of all the movies, that one captured it pretty closely.
That was very close. That was very, yeah. And thank God I wasn't one of those people, because I could not have made that. You know, being a surgeon, that I went. But if I had to be in something like Platoon, that was hell.
And Harvey, now tell me about the transition from being in practical medicine, ophthalmology, and then all of a sudden you're into the homeopathic, into the alternative end.
Well, it really happened. I'm born and raised Brooklyn, Jewish, New York, and I had to be a doctor by the time of 8. And I became an eye surgeon in Princeton, New Jersey, and one day a patient of mine, and really, frankly, I was making a lot of money, but it was pretty boring. I like to think about things. And a patient came in one day, and she was going to be healed by a psychic. And I said, oh, yeah, okay, that sounded like fun, so I'll watch that. And 6 weeks later, I went to operate on it with her glaucoma. And 6 weeks later, she was cured. So my wife went up to see the psychic, and he talked about me and my life. By the way, this psychic, he's passed away since, but he was the psychic to 4 presidents. When I was there one time, Jimmy Carter called. And he turned my life around and opened up holistic medicine. I never heard of the word. And he started to send me. He eventually directs me, and you mentioned stuff that you like, Edgar Casey.
Yes.
He directs me to the ARE clinic, Edgar Casey's work. And I pack up, close my practice in Princeton, take an 80% cut in income, and I go out to Arizona to start to learn about holistic medicine and the way Edgar Casey looks at it.
That's pretty gutsy for you to do that, Harvey.
Well, you know, you have to live with yourself. I was almost suicidal. Here I was driving Jaguars and Porsches and living in Princeton at 33 years old, And I was depressed as all heck. I made it to the top, and what's it about? This was, you know, all these things that we go after did not fulfill me. And fulfillment, though, and when I got into back into this, what I call real medicine, when I got back into it, helping people, that's so rewarding.
Do you think this has made you a better doctor, understanding homeopathic-type medicine and real medicine? And when I say real medicine, I mean what we know as practical medicine.
Well, very honestly, what we know as practical medicine, number one, we do not have health care. We have disease care management. All you're taught in medical school is disease. You are not taught a minute of health. You're taught how to stop disease. This way, when I'm talking about health, when people come into me, if you came into me as a patient, after I saw you and treated you and you walked out, I guarantee you'll be feeling better. If you're not feeling better, then I've missed something and I've done something wrong. Okay? My job is to get you feeling better, and the highest goal of a physician should be to discharge their patient.
Exactly. Exactly. And you are a believer that your body is made to take care of itself, aren't you?
Well, yes, the body to me is so miraculous. The more I got into studying, we'll talk about the live blood, the more I got into studying that, the more I saw how magnificent one organ is connected to the other, how the whole body knew everything. You know, today we have the pulmonologist doesn't speak to the cardiologist. Okay, we've broken the compartments. No, this is one unit that's totally interconnected, every cell communicating, and the magnificence of this. Again, I was a left-brain scientist. The concept of a creation and all of that, no. The more I got involved into the wonders of the body, there is no other answer of what's going on. I mean, this creation, evolution, whatever you want to call it, this is a magnificent thing.
Harvey, one of your works, The Cure for Cancer, and I've got to ask you this. This has been something that has been on my mind for years and years, and I have never gotten the answer. And that is, I am convinced that all of us are walking around right now with cancer cells. We've all got them, you know, and our immune systems either can suppress it or keep them from mutating, or we're going to lose that battle and we're going to get cancer, and we may fight it, but we could die.
Well, I'm going to tell you a little different way to look at cancer.
Okay, because then I have my question.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Cancer is a mold of the body. Now, when we die, we should mold in the coffin. Because of all the pollutions that are coming on that we've had now, we're now molding while we're alive. I give you an example when I talk about cancer is not random. I don't believe in randomness in nature. Breast cancer is skyrocketing. Now, breast cancer, 80% of the time, will go to the bones first. It'll hit 20 spots in the bones before it goes anyplace else. This totally changes the theory of one cell breaking loose and going wild. Okay, no, it's a mold. And the breast cancer feeds on calcium. When they gave women all this hormonal therapy for menopause, and they gave them calcium for the osteoporosis, they skyrocketed breast cancer because calcium is a major food source.
Interesting.
It's a mold, and that is, if we look at it that way, the way we're looking at it, the way it spread one cell accidentally going wild, no, it's pH controlled.
It lives in an acidic body, doesn't it?
When we're stressed, our cells become very acid, and the blood becomes alkaline, and the normal pH is considered 7.4, the pH of the venous blood. My average cancer patient is 7.55, 7.57. If you ever get it below 7.35, cancer will die all over the body.
All right. Now, do we all have this mold in us right now?
Well, it depends on the pH. If you have good oxygenation, your pHs will be better. If you are more toxic and stressed and more adrenalized, okay, then the chances are going, your pHs will change, and the chances of the mold going.
Interesting. I about 2 years ago, started to balance my pH levels because I thought they were a little lower than I wanted them to. They were too acidic. And I started drinking green juices, powdered juices. I started to making sure that my pH level and my drinking water was higher than normal. And I hope I'm doing the right thing, Harvey.
Those are good things, and they're very good. But I'm going to tell you the most important thing about pH is attitude.
Really?
If you're worried, you're going to start to be stressed with your adrenal glands, and that's going to be a real problem. You know, the French are number one in the world in health care. The United States is 37th.
Jeez.
And I think one of the reasons is at the end of the day, they have a 2 or 3 hour meal, they've forgotten about everything, and they just have joy at the end of the day.
Okay, here's my question that has perplexed me. How can a little kid come down with cancer?
I really think it's because there's so much more pollutions that are coming about. What's going on now in neonatal care and childbirth, to me, is fairly barbaric. If you watch an ultrasound, you may not hear the ultrasound, but that embryo hears it, and that embryo is disturbed by it. I think we're doing things intrauterine that's starting to disturb the whole system. And plus, the parents are polluted, we're polluted, so the kids are coming out already not clean. And this is what's going on with our country, with the pollution and our body is absolutely horrible. And it's really weakening our system, and it's lowering our expectancy in the United States is dropping fast.
Okay, now, you're a doctor. You've written a book called Doctors Are More Harmful Than Germs. You're going against your own grain. How come?
Well, we were taught the germ theory of disease. Everything is germs. Okay, but really, honestly, the germ theory of disease comes up with Pasteur in the late 1800s. He says germs cause disease, and his rival says no, germs live in a diseased body. Pasteur, on his deathbed, recants and says he's wrong. However, in 1910, Rockefeller picks up the concept. Rockefeller gives a fortune of money to the pharmaceutical industry to go after the germ theory and sponsors that. Meanwhile, he dies at the age of 97, a vegetarian all his life with a homeopathic physician. Okay, that's very historical. And what goes on then is the AMA and all of this now start to have a Department of Propaganda, and they start to now advertise all of these things and put everything else under the system, and that's what's really taken over. We've been brainwashed by their propaganda, and that's very historical.
Do you find that more and more mainstream doctors are beginning to understand the alternative end of medicine?
I think doctors are very frustrated. You know, the average doctor lives 4 years less than the average person.
I didn't know that.
Okay, and I once had...
They drink more, too, don't they?
Everything. Remember the Earth Shoes? There was a designer of the Earth Shoes who's a yoga master, Ann Kelso. I worked with her for a year. And she said the average doctor lives 4 years less than the average person because deep down they know they're full of garbage.
Yeah.
They know they're wrong, and it eats away at them.
Well, you know, I've been in doctor's offices when the marketing person for this pharmaceutical company comes in with their suitcase. And, you know, you go in, you talk to your doctor, and they prescribe this thing that was just given to them. And you always have to question Harvey, you know, did he even study this? Does he know what it does? Or, you know, did the marketing guy come up to him and say, hey, this is a new drug for this? And he just prescribes it because it's easy for him to do that. What do they do?
This is really, honestly, this is what medicine is about. I could not wait. People would come in to me, and I didn't know what to do, and I'd say, next week they're coming in with a new drug for me. And I couldn't wait for the marketing person to come in with a new drug. They started on your internship doing this. They went through the residency doing this. They went through your practice doing this. And it becomes the marketing on it, and since no one cures anything, everyone's now looking for that miracle thing.
I would love to see a doctor tell the marketing guy, I want to see your studies, and I want to know who paid for the studies, and da-da-da-da-da, before I start prescribing this drug. But they don't do that, do they?
They don't do that. They just take the samples, and they give them out, and the patient loves it because, hey, I got 10 free samples, and I already gave him a prescription for the other 50. Okay, and that's what I practice medicine that way, and that's why I was suicidal. I said, this is stupid. This is crazy that I'm listening to this pharmacy guy wait to next week to come in for this new miracle thing.
Are there a lot of frustrated doctors out there now?
Again, they live 4 years less than the average person. I think they're very frustrated. And what's going on in medical school nowadays, and when I went to medical school, there was 100 students in each class, one woman. Now 52% of applicants are women, and women are bright. Make no mistake about it. But the point is, men don't want to go into it because they like to run their own business, and they can't do it anymore.
It's too controlled.
It's so controlled, you cannot step out of line. I once had charges brought against me that I cured a person with an illegal means.
Okay? Oh, really?
Yes, and the head doctor said, we don't care if your patients are getting better or worse. We only care if you're doing the work in our way scientifically.
And what was illegal? Not approved?
I treated something. The person came in to me with a severe eye problem. I was now doing general practice.
As the ophthalmologist?
I wasn't. No, I was now into my holistic stuff. As an ophthalmologist, left me alone. Into my natural stuff, and a patient comes in with a severe eye problem. Well, I was an ophthalmologist, and I was a licensed physician, so I injected something behind the eye, and I cured the person. Well, he wrote to his doctors and told them about that. The doctors complained to the medical board, and the medical board examined me. Oh. They went after me for curing
the person. Had he just kept quiet and said, I've been cured, you would have been fine.
Right. Right, but I had charges. I had, if you go on Quack Watch, you'll see that I got censured for illegible handwriting. That's what the judge did too.
How did you know that this injection was going to work?
I knew that. I went to the nerve roots. It's called neural therapy. You treat the nerve to the tissue. That livens up the tissue. It's a classic thing that I've done. Neural therapy has been around for 50 years. I used remedies from Europe that will stimulate the growth of the tissue, and it calmed down the inflammation, and there was not a pharmaceutical remedy in that. But it's been years of study of going to Europe and having German teachers teaching me this stuff.
Do you still like medicine?
Oh, well, not medicine. I love what I do. Okay, medicine. I will use pharmaceutical medicines occasionally. I mean, I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. But most of the time they're using it, it's not necessary at all. First of all, they're chemicals. They have no such thing as side effects. They are direct negative effects. If they're foreign chemicals, you will suffer from them. Everyone's writing prescriptions, and I don't think I've really written a prescription in a couple of years now. If they need a prescription for hypertension, send them to someone, and give me 6 months, I'll fix the hypertension.
Yeah, absolutely. And diabetes must be out of control.
Yeah, it is, and it's getting worse and worse. I don't get as many diabetic patients, but what's going on, it's a type 2 diabetes, all of these fat people and all of the chemicals they're eating, and our blood sugar is going off the moon.
Yeah.
I mean, we've become, I think, the fattest country in the world with all the chemicals, and that's creating, it's ruining our organs and changing new diseases out there.
You talk about not the germ, but the terrain. What does that mean?
Well, it's not the terrain. It's the soil the germ is growing in. Okay? That's the key. If your body is cells are too acidic and if the blood is too alkaline, you're going to grow. You have a fertile soil. We have billions of germs in us. If we go out of balance, those germs are going to change.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Now, germs change size and shape depending on the terrain. We're taught a streptococcus is always a streptococcus. No. Everything in life changes depending on what the soil it is, what's going on with the humidities, etc. So if you got a very polluted body, you will grow germs. Other people, I once lectured with a physician who called people up out of the audience that were HIV positive, and he would put needles into them and needles into himself, just to show that it wasn't the germ that was causing it.
That's pretty gutsy.
I wouldn't do it.
No.
But I watched it done, and I totally believe it's not the germ, okay? And you can eat the germ. It's not the stuff. It has to grow, and then it's waste product. The germ doesn't want to kill you.
Once you change your body, how long does it take to kill off the germs?
Well, first of all, again, it's not the germ. The germ will go back to its normal germ.
That's what I mean. How long does it take for the germ to fade away?
It depends on how far you have been out of a line. If you came in to me today, I will start to get you better with right now. But let's assume things have been growing on you, and you've been sort of what I call out of line now for 20 years. Well, it's going to take me about 2 to 4 weeks to reverse a year of a process.
For 1 week, for 1 year.
For one year, 2 to 4 weeks to reverse 1 year of a process.
Okay.
Now, you will walk out feeling better. You're not going to be your 4-minute miler that you were 20 years ago. But give me a couple of years, and I'll get you back to that.
Good point. Harvey, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to be back with you, full program, with Dr. Harvey Biggleson, as we talk about doctors are more harmful than germs, and also his other works on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Dr. Harvey Biggleson. We're talking about, of course, his works, his website, Dr. Dr. Biggleson, B-I-G-E-L-S-E-N, Com. Important to spell these out every once in a while, Harvey, because people are in cars and they're all over the place.
Yep, I agree.
So the difference between Western medicine and alternative medicine, every time I hear the phrase alternative medicine, I've always thought of the Chinese, the ancient Chinese, with all their mixing of herbs and spices and supplements and things like that. Is that accurate?
Yes. I use actually three different philosophies of medicine I combined. I think what I call divine philosophies. Acupuncture came up out of Asia, which is the electrical circuitry of the body. The philosophy of homeopathy, of how disease moves in and out of the body, came up in the U.S., and I'm heavily into structure and osteopathy and chiropractic, because that's the key. You've got to put those three together. And there was basically a very famous scientist that said disease cannot exist where there are no obstructions. If you've got obstruction in the flow, you're going to get a stagnant pond, and in the stagnant pond, that's where the germs grow. So it's not the germ, it's the stagnation and the blockage in the body. So the structure of the body, to me, I'm heavily into.
You got interested also in looking at blood, the holographic blood, one of your works. Tell me about this.
Well, this started about 25 years ago. I was sponsored by a private foundation to go to Europe to see what was going on, and then we ended up in Montreal, outside of Montreal, at this French-Canadian physicist Gaston Naissens, who's got a microscope that will magnify up to 30,000 times. They took a drop of blood, and we looked at the blood, and I looked in there, and I broke out in goosebumps. I had never seen anything like it. There were all sorts of things moving and living in the blood. I was taught in medical school, if you take a drop of blood out of the blood will die. And this blood is sterile. No, we have so many things. There are plant life in the blood. Platelets are plants. There are things moving in the blood. There are no names in American literature. And in 100 years, I'm the third medical doctor only in 100 years to look at the blood live.
That's amazing.
It blows me away. What they do is they stain the blood, and the stain fixes everything through immortality. If it's not stainable, it's invisible.
Uh-huh. That's a good point.
And it was, to tell you how close they are, I once had the chief of hematology at Tufts New England Medical Center in my clinic in Mexico, and he said, why would anyone look at the live blood? And he refused to look at my microscope.
These things that are in the blood, should they be there?
Yes, this is our life. They carry the life force, the energy, the chi, the ki, the prana, whatever it is. The Germans have names for them, call them sympatites or symbionts. The French call them somatids. We don't have any name for them, but they are carrying the life force. And you can see if you're, quote, ill, you can see the activity, tremendous activity. If you're doing well, it's mellow. You can tell all that activity in the blood. There's so much life in the blood, it's incredible.
How can you purify your blood? How can you keep it in top condition?
Well, it's the body. The blood is telling us what's going on. Basically, the structure of the body is the real key. Surgeries are very damaging because they're actually someone's putting a knife into you. Okay, that's very damaging. It's taking care of your body. I'm not a jogging fan, yoga fan. Breathing, most important thing to do is the breath. The yoga breathing is very important type of thing. Swimming is great. We can fast for days, but you can't stop breathing. The better oxygenated our cells are, the healthier we are. That is the single best key. Not the foods, it's the oxygenation.
What do you think of going in some of these hyperbaric chambers?
We use them all the time.
Ah, you like them then?
Oh, okay. I love them. In fact, cancer is an anaerobic disease. Cancer only lives, it's a glucose metabolism, and only lives anaerobically and no oxygen. Oxygen will actually slow the growth of cancer, so we take out cancer patients and throw them in hyperbaric chambers. We have them go leash them, and they sleep in them. And
I'd go nuts in one of those things, Harvey.
Well, I'm a little claustrophobic. We got a pretty big one in our office.
but they're clear, so you can look out, right?
Oh yeah. We can clear. We with people, you can speak in there. In fact, the one I have, you can sit up there. And at times, I'll just take an hour break or something like that, and just take a nap in there.
It's the non-moving, I guess, that would freak me out.
Well, like I said, I'm claustrophobic, but I can quiet down and meditate in there, and you come out. Clear. You come out so clear because all of a sudden you're high octane. It's not that you're running around. You're more grounded. You're clearer. You can see the change in the live blood before and afterwards. And when the oncologists see my patients, they keep on asking them, how come you're doing better than all my other cases?
Good for you.
That's one of the reasons, is the hyperbaric chamber. They are very good.
I took a closed MRI once, and I got to tell you, I felt like I was in a casket. I couldn't go through it. It was like a 40-minute thing, and 28 minutes into it, the nurse came back and said, "We've got to start all over. You moved." And I went, "I didn't move." She said, "I'm sorry, you moved. We have to start all over." And they give you this little button to squeeze. It's like the little panic button. And it hit me, Harvey. It just hit me. I wanted out of that thing, and I left, and I never did the test. Well, now they, thank God, they've got these open donut-looking ones.
Well, you know,
much better.
Come back to this is what medicine today has been. Medicine to me in the United States has become a Las Vegas show. It's all glitz and all of these things. Got to put you in these MRIs and all of that. No one takes a look at the blood.
Yeah.
Unbelievable that they do all of these wild things and fancy and everything that, and no one comes back to the simplicity. And what gets me on this whole thing, all these people doing these fancy things, do you know how many diseases they've cured in 100 years? None.
None.
What makes them the experts, and why do we all follow them?
None. I was talking about this about a month ago. You know, Jerry Lewis, God love him.
God bless
every him. Year. Every year does his muscular dystrophy campaign. Must have raised billions of dollars by now. Are we any closer to solving muscular dystrophy?
No, he's actually building playgrounds now with his money. It's so sad to watch it. We're not close to anything because it reminds me, what's going on in science today reminds me of the moron that lost a quarter on a dark night and was looking two blocks down the street because that's where the street lamp was. You know, they don't wake up and say, wait a second, maybe let's look at it another way. No, it's so dominated by the germ theory of disease and by the pharmaceutical industry, and all the research, 90% of the research is sponsored by the pharmaceutical industry.
Well, and they want research to go on every year. It's what funds them, isn't it?
Right, but again, it's pharmaceutical research. 90% is pharmaceutical.
Yeah.
It's not research. I mean, I can't write an article in the journal because there's no double blinds. I can't. There's no double blinds of George Nuri's blood.
Good point.
Okay, and they will not accept it. On double blinds, again, this is a crazy concept. How is George Nuri a double blind?
What kind of microscope did you use to look at the blood?
It's called a dark field microscope. You don't need major power on it. I have some very good microscopes that I've had from Germany for a while. There's a couple now you can make in the United States and seeing this. They're not major microscopes, but dark field gives you, it's not looking bright, it's a reflective way of looking at it and gives you pictures in the blood. If you go to my website, you'll see some of the videos and stuff that's moving around in the blood and the pictures in the blood on that.
So when you have disease, can you see that in the blood too?
Oh, without question, yes.
They're scooting all over the place.
Everything. You know, if your blood dies in an hour, you don't have long to live. You give me a five-year-old kid, their blood's going to 4 or 5 days on that slide. So the faster your blood deteriorates, the faster you're going to die, and you can actually see it happening. Okay, and everything, you can see how well oxygenated it is. Also, the blood has images of it. My book, The Holographic Blood, it took me years to believe it even. I mean, if a woman's pregnant, I can see that in the blood, and I can see pictures in the blood. You can see that in my book of actually the baby.
So is that one of the first things you try to solve, the blood?
Basically, a patient comes in to me. If you came in to me, I would do a history and a physical on you, but I'd look at where you've been invaded, where your body's been beaten up. Example, Lyme disease. We're getting tremendous terms around on Lyme disease, and it's not the germ. You look at them. In 2006, they had a vasectomy. 2007, Lyme disease. And it was the surgery. Okay, again, surgery, again, is the knife cutting the body. And this is a great creation, and the body is a constant moving thing. And when you have a scar, it's a block, it's a disturbance field, nothing gets through with it. As soon as we treated the vasectomy scar on the patient with using this concept of neural therapy, 2 days later, he's out of bed and he's back to work.
How do you get rid of a scar?
I don't get rid of the scar, but the scar, the body will try to heal the inflammation caused by it, but the scar is a dam. So what goes on, it's like a wind-up toy running against a wall, and eventually you get more and more fatigued. If I treat the scar, I can go treat the inflammation and heal the inflammation at the base of the scar. It'll tend to come back again. So scars need to be treated at once every 3 months to once a year, depending on each case and how much of a problem they're causing. But that's the single worst injury a body can have, is someone putting a knife into it.
If somebody needed surgery, let's say, to remove a kidney, would you say, don't do that?
Or? No, no. First of all, number one, the last thing we do is surgery. Do everything first. If surgery is necessary, yes, do the surgery.
Okay, so you will perform surgery or you'd
surgery.
Recommend it if they needed it?
Oh, without question. You know, I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Right now, they're doing the telling women, you don't need your uterus. Let's get rid of it 50. Well, that's insanity, okay? If the creator or whatever didn't want you to have the uterus, they would have dropped the darn thing out. Okay, they don't tell men to get rid of their testicles at 50 with prostate cancer, but give them time, they'll probably do that too. To me, this body is sacred. And leave it alone, get your hands off of it, don't poison it. Sometimes you need to do these things. You break a leg, you need surgery. You rupture appendix, you need surgery. Okay, but 9 out of 10 appendixes that are taken out have never been ruptured.
No, I never had my tonsils out, by the way.
That's good. The tonsils are a big drain. We get tonsillitis when we're 4 or 5 because we're teething. And the tonsils just drain, so they get enlarged and the doctors cut them out. In fact, I want to give you a story about a tonsil case with my son.
Okay.
He was going to go off to college, and he's got 104 temperature. His white count was 19,000, very elevated. His liver tests were abnormal, and his mono test was positive. And his tonsils were green pus, swollen, closed. He could hardly breathe. I did my concept of, I had actually a German physician. It was the first time I'd seen this. I heard about him. I called him down. He worked on Indian reservation. He took a microscope down. I examined my son's blood and then took out some remedies and injected my son in the tonsils. Then he took some blood out and mixed it with the remedies, injected it in his butt, and he told my wife he can go to college now. The next day, his tonsils were 70% pink, and he had no temperature. By the end of the week, his blood test was normal, his mono test was negative, and he went off to college on Saturday. And
amazing.
I grabbed that German physician and said, get off the Indian reservation and work under me.
That is something.
It was the most impressive thing I'd seen. And
he's like a medicine man.
Yes. And now, frankly, I do it all the time. I've been doing it for 25 years, and people walk out. If you come in limping, if you don't walk out not limping, I've done something wrong, and I get upset. They walk out feeling better. Okay, and it's so exciting to do that.
There's a doctor in Italy, I believe, who is giving patients sodium bicarbonate, injecting it into tumors, eradicating cancer. Have you heard of this?
I heard about that. What he's doing is changing the pH. We will actually do things like sodium bicarb and use hydrochloric acid and stuff like that in the IV. When I had my clinic in Mexico, we dealt with a lot of cancer. Cancer in the United States is very political. But we used to control the pHs with things like that, with bicarb and hydrochloric acid.
Well, what do you think of a teaspoon of bicarb in water?
That's very good.
Won't hurt you then.
In fact, I use that. There's a company I use, and they call it Alcala powder. And I get up every morning, and I take a teaspoon of it, and it keeps you more mellow.
Does it balance you pH-wise?
Yes. It keeps you much more balanced. But then again, if I get angry, I'm going to throw myself out of balance, but it starts me off. If I need to get back in balance, I'll go back and drink some alkalized water.
Well, let's say you get stressed. At least if you have that in your system, it will help you, right?
Yes, you won't be nearly as stressed as much, without question.
I've been taking turmeric ever since I interviewed a fellow years ago who's remained a friend of the show because he said it helps reduce inflammation.
I don't know enough about it. I knew what turmeric was. I haven't really played with that. But reducing inflammation is one thing. And see, we do anti-inflammatories. Inflammation is the way, if you cut yourself, the body heals by an inflammation process.
Mm-hmm.
It's when the inflammation is trapped and can't get by the scar or something like that, that now the body starts to weaken. I go and after the inflammation and I heal that. And then the body moves up in its quality of performance.
How do you handle hearts and arteries and things like that?
Frankly, that's the easiest. Okay.
Really?
Yes, the heart does one thing. I mean, the liver does 500. If it fails on 2, no one knows. Not only does the heart do one thing, but
when that fails, you know.
You know. But it's also, though, the lungs, the chest wall, and the diaphragm all work like a bellows helping the heart. And many times, if you can get the chest wall and the diaphragm and the lungs working right, that heart is just relaxed because this thing is pumping it nicely. Heart disease, some of the remedies I've used in Germany, I can make a red cell squeeze through the tiniest capillary. So I've broken heart attacks and strokes almost on the spot using that, and I don't find heart disease tough. They make it big. That's their big surgery. There's, to me, a lot of other chronic disease a lot tougher than heart disease.
So if somebody's got somewhat blocked arteries, what do you recommend?
Well, there's ways that there's remedies that I can use that will make your red cells go right through with that, and then I can start to use some other products that can start to make the vessels more elastic. What happens is, as we get inflamed, the body, inflammation is a fire to the body.
And they're calcified too, right?
Right. What happens is the everything starts to dry out, the arteries start to crack, the blood, body brings in platelets to heal it, and then calcifies over it with cholesterol. They blame it on the cholesterol. It's the inflammation that's creating the cracks in the arteries.
I agree with that. As a matter of fact, there was a research study done years ago, doctor, that talked about calcification, inflammation, and apparently nanobacteria, which also has a devastating effect in the heart.
Well, they blame it on that, but those bacteria don't have a mind. They're doing something for whatever reason that's going on. If they're in a stagnant pond, their toxin is trying to clean it up so they can get the food. So it's not. We keep on coming back to the bacteria, and I don't like it that way at all. I look at it completely the other way. It's the terrain it's living in. It's the pond that's living in. It's much more important than the germ.
Or would you be considered a rogue physician?
Yeah. Rogue, maverick, I've been talked about that. But the work that I do is, it's been around for 50 years. This is not new work, okay? This has just been blinded in the United States by the pharmaceutical industry.
A lot of it's common sense, isn't it?
It's so common sense. It's so much simpler. Medical textbooks are thousands of pages. My book is a couple hundred pages. It explains more in understanding how the body does than the medical textbooks. The medical textbooks give you names to things and then tell you what box to put it in and how to treat it. And the name of the game is the name. And frankly, they're so far off. It's incredible. It's so much simpler if you look at how wonderful this body is. And if you can keep it in shape, boy, it does. It heals itself. It's an incredible machine.
Tell me about the Arizona Homeopathic Medical Practice Act that you helped co-author.
Okay. Well, we have in the United States, essentially, like in California, first of all, we have five licensed practitioners, and yet insurance will pay for only one of them. We have MDs, osteopaths, chiropractors, naturopaths, and acupuncturists. When I was in Arizona, healthcare is states' rights. So what was going on is the insurance companies would not, they'd pay if I cut your heart out, but they would not pay if I fixed your heart and your chest. I actually went up to the head of Blue Cross Blue Shield and talked to him about that, and there's no way they were going to do that. I got together, several of us got together, five of us got together. We raised our fees, $5 a patient. We bought the best lobbyists in the state. And then it took us about a year, but I frankly gave a check to every single legislator in the state, and we got the law passed. And what the law states, you must be an MD first or a licensed osteopath first before you can go and understand, work, become a homeopathic physician. Once you're a homeopathic physician, you're now licensed under an agency that understands that. When I was licensed under the medical agency, they would come after me for everything. The homeopathic agency, now we have people looking at alternative stuff, now have a freedom to work. It was one of my proudest accomplishments to allow the freedoms in Arizona. What can be done in Arizona? We set it up, for example, the FDA controls everything. We set it up that any product that's been in use for more than 10 years in the world is called the proving of its effectiveness. So we legalized any product around the world is more effective.
That was brilliant. Harvey, stay with us. We're at the top of the hour. We will come right back with you on Coast to Coast AM.